and ugly and nasty war, a war which made brutality a regular part of life, which coarsened public life, which coarsened public debate. Sparta won, finally, if one can say that anybody really won this war. Throughout the Athenian democracy, which the Spartans believed, perhaps they'd made hobgoblins in their mind, but they believed that it had been the Athenian democracy that had been the problem for all this. You'll recall Thucydides had said actually it was Sparta's inordinate fear of Athens that had generated this war. And the Spartans introduced a regime into Athens, the 30 tyrants, as they came to be called, sort of 30 rather brutal right-wing thugs who were supposed to keep control over the Athenian situation. These fellows discredited themselves pretty quickly, and a moderate democracy was restored, but it was really only a shadow of its former self. But in the very last stages of the Peloponnesian War, something in the Greek context almost unthinkable had happened. Spartans were landlubbers. And the Athenians had a great navy. Now, the Athenians had actually lost big chunks of their navy on several occasions during the Peloponnesian War, but it became pretty clear that to defeat Athens, Sparta needed resources beyond its own infantry forces. They turned to Persia, the unthinkable. They allied with the ancient enemy. Well, that meant that for a generation after the conclusion of the Peloponnesian War, the Greek world was in a kind of an uneasy balance. From one point of view, Sparta was dominant. From another point of view, it was really Persia that was dominant, because Persia provided Sparta with the resources and with the manpower and with the military power to maintain their authority. Well, eventually, various of the Greek cities chafed under Spartan domination and under this Persian intrusion into the Greek world, something which for at least some of them was just unthinkable. The most prominent among those who felt this sense of distress at this control of the Greek world by the Spartans, by the Persians, were those of the city of Thebes. Thebes produced, in the 360s BC, 370s BC, a series of very, very able, very capable kings, very capable rulers, who gradually achieved what we refer to as the Theban hegemony. They basically now subjected most of Greece to Theban rule. Well, the Greeks chafed then under Theban rule. And Athens once again forged an alliance of a large number of Greek cities designed to overthrow the rule of Thebes. The Athenians were basically successful in doing this. And they then began to form a much smaller version of their old empire. We call this the Second Athenian Empire. But for the most part, most Greek cities were simply not going to let Athens get too big for its britches again. They remembered the Athens of the 5th century. They wanted no part of that. So the Athenian Empire of the 4th century had been strong enough to lead in defeating Thebes, but was not strong enough to dominate Greece. It was relatively weak. Meanwhile, whilst the Greeks are squabbling amongst themselves, storm clouds were gathering in the north. The kingdom of Macedon was consolidating its position. Now, the Macedonians, the northern neighbors of the Greeks, were people with whom the Greeks had had various kinds of contacts over the years. They knew vaguely who these people were. They had traded with them and so on. But the Greeks, honestly, had not thought very much about the Macedonians. The Greeks called the Macedonians barbarians, but indeed the Greeks called everybody barbarians. You know, don't you hate people who say, well, there's only two kinds of people in the world, and they proceed to divide the world into two kinds of people. Well, the Greeks, in fact, divided the world into two kinds of people. There were those who spoke Greek and those who didn't. Now, there was a very clear negative connotation here. I mean, we who speak Greek are clearly better than they who do not. But essentially, it was descriptive. There are those who speak Greek and those who don't. Those who don't speak Greek, the Greeks thought, babbled. They were incomprehensible. So the Greeks even made up a word. They took two nonsense syllables and put a Greek ending on it. Barbaros. So a barbaros is a babbler who goes ba 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 ba. But then by extension becomes the barbarian, the foreigner, the alien, the one who does not speak our language. Gradually then, of course, barbarian comes to acquire a whole series of other sort of cultural and ethical connotations. But initially, they don't speak Greek. So the Greeks called the Macedonians barbarians. And this meant, well, they're like us. They don't speak our language. Macedon's kings, in point of fact, were not barbarians at all. They were very accomplished rulers, very capable rulers. By conquering a very large set of silver mines, they got access to very substantial financial resources that enabled them to undertake substantial building projects that enable them to win, or to buy, if you will, substantial human and material resources in the development of their kingdom.